It is the Blitz, Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4 here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. We go to the phone lines. He hops on once a week. We're always thankful for his time and his presence. Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune, our guest. Find his podcast network at MNSPN.com. This segment, as always, is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Thanks, as always, Jim. We're going to start with the Gophers on the football front. PJ Fleck and the University of Minnesota agreed to a contract extension. I believe it was just a one-year added contract extension. The timing, I don't know, maybe I'm off here, but the timing seems a bit odd. Are the Gophers worried about some of the openings at these Power 5 schools, UCLA, Florida, Tennessee? I saw yesterday that Texas A&M is planning on getting rid of Kevin Sumlin after the LSU game this weekend. Are the Gophers perhaps a little bit weary about that and overdoing it, showing their own commitment to PJ Fleck?
This is the essence of Minnesota paranoia. Oh, somebody's going to come get our guy. Well, I don't think you worry about that when you just lost to Northwestern by more than any other coach in the history of Minnesota football has ever lost to Northwestern, and he's still signed up through 2022. Listen, they've done this before. They did it with Jerry Kill. You know, they bring in Jerry Kill, and Jerry did not have good teams initially, and they gave him a contract extension. They wanted him to be happy. They believed he'd be good long-term, and they wanted to be in a position where if he was good long-term, that they had him locked up as long as possible. So, listen, there are two accurate reactions to this news. The first is snark, which I'm fine with, which is that, you know, and the first reaction I gave you on the show, which is, you know, yeah, St. Cloud State's going to come in and take this guy away if you don't sign him up. You know what? That's a legitimate reaction when you sign a guy who's won five games for your program following a 9-win team. But here's where it's probably just not that big a story. They extended a guy they believe in for one more year. The timing is weird. The timing is awkward. It leaves them open to being ridiculed. But extending a guy you like for a year is just not that big a deal.
Yeah, my follow-up to you as well, Jim, was going to be, could this perhaps be the paranoia that you mentioned, but also that Mark Coyle and the university are just so certain that they have pegged the right guy that they don't want to even entertain the idea that he could go somewhere else?
That is part of it. And the other thing is, when you add one year to a guy's deal, how much of the reality of the situation are you really changing? They're already planning. If you're going to hire a 34-year-old coach whose strength is recruiting and program building, you're saying we're going to give him 5 years, unless something crazy happens or something really disgusting happens, you're going to give him 5 years, right? So, you know, again, adding another year just doesn't change that timeline much. And we also know in big-time college football and with the Gophers that if you really want to get rid of a guy, you'll pay whatever price is necessary. And so it just doesn't change anything very much. It just, the timing looks odd.
I know you were in Evanston on Saturday for the game against Northwestern. You referenced it a couple minutes ago. How deflating was it seeing Minnesota play, and puzzling? I thought they played arguably their best game of the season against Nebraska 2 weeks ago. You could maybe make a case for the Oregon State game. Maybe there's one or two that is escaping my memory. But I thought they played their best football, their most complete game against Nebraska, and they follow it up with what I thought was their worst performance of the year. And I just thought it was mind-boggling that in a span of 6-7 days, they go from their best football that we've seen to their by far their worst game of the year.
In a way, if you can pull the camera way back, you say this is why we love football and why football is fascinating, because they look like two completely different teams. And usually I hate that cliche, which team's going to show up. But in this case, you could use that cliche. They look like two completely different teams, different bodies, different everything. But part of it was that Nebraska is really bad. Part of it is that Northwestern is good and is very well coached. And part of it is matchups and emotions and conditions. They go down there and they're playing in some of the worst weather I've ever seen for a football game. You know, sideways rain, freezing rain, turning to snow. It's a tiny, tiny crowd. In Nebraska, they were able to run the read option, and just that's where their success flowed from. You know, Croft was able to have a really big game running the ball. And they go play against Northwestern. Northwestern has such a good defensive front, especially on the interior defensive line, that they didn't feel like that was going to run. They didn't really even have the read option much in their game plan. So all of a sudden they go from a team that scored 54 points running the read option to a team that in driving rain is going to try to run a traditional offense and throw the ball. And when it went south, you really did see some let up, some give up in both players and coaches. I mean, for a team to lose by 39 points and attempt 11 passes in an entire game, that tells you to me that they got down about 25 or so, and they said, let's just get out of here.
Yeah, and the thing about Northwestern is they've surprised some people this year. They're in the top 25. I believe they have 8 wins now. They're something like 8-3. But throughout that win streak, and right now it stands at 6, 3 of those games, so 50% of those wins during this streak, were in overtime. One was in triple overtime. They hadn't exactly been blowing out the opposition like they did Saturday against Minnesota. Does one thing stand out more than the other, Jim, when it comes to the struggles for the Gophers for you? Is it the wide receiver drops, the run defense, the turnovers, quarterback play? Does one stand out more to you than the others?
I think the most important aspect of the loss was that this should be a decent defensive team, and they didn't do anything to stop the running game. They didn't stay in their lanes. They didn't fight off blocks. They didn't recognize what was being done to them. So I think that was, you know, if you can't stop the run in football, you're going to be in for a long day, no matter who you are, no matter who you're playing. The more obvious problem was wide receiver drops because, you know, they come out and their first completion is for 30-some yards, and then Croft threw a beautiful timing pattern to Still down the left sideline and Still just had it go through both hands. I mean, it was as catchable a ball as you'll ever see. And really, after that play, you felt like that play kind of led to the onslaught. Maybe one play shouldn't, but you felt like that was kind of if there was a turning point in a 39-point game, that was it. And the receivers continued to drop the ball, which killed drives. Between drop passes and turnovers, you know, you can't eliminate those. You can't go back and pretend those things didn't happen. But if they'd caught the passes that hit their hands and if they hadn't fumbled the ball away, maybe it's not such a crazy final score.
Always love having him on the show. He is Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune. His podcast network can be located at MNSPN.com. This segment, as always, weekly, is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Wisconsin is a 17.5-point favorite this Saturday. How do you see that game shaking out? Because, I mean, even on paper and what we've seen with the eye test from Wisconsin and Minnesota, it seems like all the strengths of Wisconsin are also weaknesses for the Gophers.
I wouldn't be surprised to see the Gophers come out and play, be very feisty at first and throw everything they have at Wisconsin and put up some kind of a fight with their run defense after being so embarrassed last week. I just don't see it lasting very long. I just think Wisconsin is built to wear this team down. So I don't know if it's going to be lopsided at halftime, but I would guess by the end of the game, Wisconsin's going to have pulled away pretty easily.
Let's go from the Gophers to the Vikings, and it's obviously happier times for the Purple and Gold. An impressive win Sunday against the Rams. Two plays in that game stood out to me, Jim Suhan. Would you agree that Anthony Harris's strip and recovery of Cooper Kupp, who was either going to be down at the one first and goal or he was going to waltz into the end zone for a touchdown, that was one that, to me, turned the tide of the game? And then Adam Thielen's touchdown catch on a simple little curl route that he turns into a 65-yard TD reception, to me, those were the two plays that stood out.
It's funny because I do this like instant reaction for StarTribune.com that we put up on the website immediately after Viking games. It's just this whatever I can write in like the 5 minutes after the game ends before I go down to the locker room. And that's exactly what I wrote. Those are the two swing plays. And if you want a third, it was Kupp, the guy who got stripped by Anthony Harris on the fumble, dropping a pass that would have been a first down and maybe a goal to go late in the game. The Rams had opportunities. The Vikings made the big plays, and that's how games between two good teams are decided. But the Harris play was immense. I mean, the Vikings are a much different team when they play from ahead than behind. And that sounds trite, but it's not true for all teams. Some teams are built to come back. The Vikings are built to, you know, give you enough of a running game that they can run play action on offense, and they are built to get after the passer on defense. And when they're playing from behind, neither of those things work as well.
Case Keenum, of course, is starting tomorrow. Mike Zimmer made that official, I think it was yesterday. Is it fair to say, as these couple of weeks have gone on, Jim, that it's gotten easier for Zimmer to name Case Keenum the starter based off his performances?
Well, I would say week.
Yeah.
I thought that Case, those two horrible interceptions in D.C., and then the way he looked nervous after them, and then the fact that Teddy came back to the active roster. I mean, that was a very intriguing – that was one of the more intriguing days of the season. And, you know, and then Zimmer said that, you know, hey, we want to get Teddy in there at some point. I think things were set up where if Case played horribly against the Rams, they might have made a move. But he didn't. He played really well. And organizationally, they are invested in Teddy Bridgewater. They want to see him play eventually. But they're not going to take Case out when he's winning and when he's playing well. And he played, I thought he played really well on Sunday in a game that was kind of a difficult test for him. He was playing against his old team. He was playing in a big national game in front of a huge, really loud crowd coming off, you know, his worst half of the season maybe. And he handled it. You know, kudos to him. He played really well.
Find his work in the Star Tribune. The podcast network can be found at MNSPN.com. Jim Suhan with us this afternoon here on AM 1450. It's brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. If I had you, I don't think I've asked you this one yet in the recent weeks where we've talked about Case Keenum. If I had you try and predict how this ends with Keenum, what is your best guess? Because we've seen him in the league for, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years now, and I just don't know why I should believe he's turning a corner now. And I know some people are starting to buy into that. I've even seen a few people say that they think Case Keenum, who's a pending free agent, could be the quarterback of the future for the Vikings. I still think they want it to be Teddy. I guess an example I use just from this year is Alex Smith, who comes out of the gates firing in New England, and he's off to this hot start, and I'm very hesitant along the way thinking, we've got a large sample size of Alex Smith, and ever since then, he sort of has regressed back to the quarterback we expected. How do you think it ends with Case Keenum?
I think Case ends up being the starter until he proves he's this year, until he proves that he's not living up to what they need him to do. And I think at some point, if he doesn't play well, listen, if he keeps playing well and keeps winning games, of course they keep him in there, and they keep him in there as long until they are done with the playoffs or whatever else. I think Case would have to look really good in the playoffs for them to alter their organizational plan, which is their organizational plan. And it's really easy for fans to be invested in just this season and say, you know, Case is playing great. Don't mess with it. This is great. But a football organization is filled with evaluators whose careers are tied to every decision they make, who are going to be judged long-term on the long-term effects of every decision they make. And internally, they think Teddy's better than Case. They think Case is benefiting from an offensive line that's playing really well, and an offensive coordinator who seems to be much more of a quarterback whisperer than Norv Turner was. So internally, the evaluation is Teddy's better than Case. And Case is still going to have to climb that hill to make anything happen. Otherwise, I think unless Case like has playoff success and starts making them think of him in a different light, I think that he leaves to go be a starting quarterback next year with another team, because I think what he's definitely proven is he's not just a backup, and there are a lot of NFL teams who don't have good starting quarterbacks.
How do you like the Vikings' chances tomorrow, and what do you think makes the difference?
This, to me, I think Viking fans should be really nervous about this. I felt like the Vikings were going to play well against the Rams. I thought they were set up to play well against the Rams. This is short week going on the road against a team that you have not played well against, a team that seems to match up well with you, seems to negate your pass rush with quick passing, has receivers who can beat you, who can run after the catch, has a defense that's played well against your offense the last 3 or 4 times out. And it's a bigger game for the Lions. I mean, if the Vikings win, the division race is over, and they're thinking about seedings, and the Lions are in trouble. If the Lions win, they're one game behind the Vikings with the tiebreaker, and the Vikings have the tougher schedule down the stretch. This is a big game, and I think the Lions are going to play desperate. I think the Vikings are the better team, but that doesn't always, you know, that's not always the deciding factor.
Jim Suhan with us this afternoon. Work in the Star Tribune can be found there. Also, his podcast network at MNSPN.com, brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Let's finish up with the Wolves. I always love having you on because we can bounce around to Wolves, Gophers, Vikings, whatever it is. So we'll finish up with Tom Thibodeau's club. They enter tonight, Jim, on a 2-game losing streak. They're playing Orlando at Target Center. We're nearly a fourth of the way through the season. I look at this 4-game homestand, 3 against sub-500 teams, and I think it's a pivot point for the Wolves, a chance to beat some teams that they absolutely should, right?
Yes, and, you know, the 2-game losing streak, the problem was not going to Charlotte on the second night of a back-to-back and losing. That always, that, you know, there are losses that are scheduled to happen in the NBA, you know, and that was one of them. The problem was blowing the lead at home against the Detroit Pistons the night before. They win on Sunday night. The record's in really good shape. Nobody's really bothered by one loss in a row. That's the tipping point of their recent play. They just still, they have games where they look like they figured out how to play together, and they have games where they look like they still don't know how to play together. It's kind of the pendulum swinging back and forth. Here they are, home for four games, a chance to, I mean, listen, what are they, 11-7?
Yeah, 10-7.
Good record.
Yeah.
10-7, that's a pretty good record. There's nothing wrong with that record. If they can make some hay at home now, they can be on, you know, they can be on pace for about 50 victories, and nobody would have argued with that or had qualms with that before the season started.
Yeah, and those four games that I mentioned on this homestand, Magic, Heat, Suns, to start it all below 500, and then they finish up with John Wall, Bradley Beal, and the Washington Wizards. We'll leave on this, Jim. How would you assess where the Wolves are at 17 games in? As in, if someone approached you and said, hey, Jim, I haven't watched 1 minute of Timberwolves basketball this season, how are they doing? What would you say?
I would say they're doing fine, but they're not where they need to be. And you know what? That's kind of what I don't want to contradict myself. He's going into the season, I said, I could see them taking some time to figure themselves out, and I think they'll be a much better team at the end of the season than they are at the beginning of the season, and it does take time for players to figure out how to play together. So, you know, we all, in the flow of the season, we pick on details. Big picture, to me, they're right about where they should be.
Find his work in the Star Tribune, the podcast network at MNSPN.com. Thank you, as always, Jim, and have a good Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Mitch. Thanks.
Arif Hassan talking Vikings with us next.